Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're tuned in to another segment of Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And I'm your host, and I'm thrilled to be here, as always. I have to say that this show lights me up. Doing this show lights me up more than most things in my life, and I'm a pretty excited person about everything. So my show is a highlight. It's really a highlight. Well, the subject tonight is East meets West. What does this mean? In the beginning, I think it meant foreign policy and foreign relations, everything from Richard Nixon and China to Dwight Eisenhower to Kennedy to, you know, the different politicians that we had. And East meets West was always this Henry Kissinger kind of a thing. It wasn't anything that affected me, although for some people, East meets West means that they like Chinese or Thai food. And lately, it seems that in the West has become the new East, because there's yoga studios on every corner, and people from New York to Minneapolis are meditating. In other words, it's not just a California phenomenon, because before, it was only, you know, people in California were brown rice and they did meditation. But now, it's Ayurvedic medicine has become a household phenomenon due to the efforts of Deepak Chopra. So, my guest today, Chandi Devi, is somebody who knows something about East and West, what it means to be from the East and what it means for Westerners to try and compare themselves to or meditate like or have practices that come from the East. Chandi Devi has taught practical Tantra and the meditative arts for many years. She was editor-in-chief of Karma Cafe for a couple of years, and now she hosts their online radio show, the Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour. And she features professionals of diverse backgrounds, including me. I've been on her show, and she's written a book. She has a DVD set that has to do with practices to activate and transmute sexual energy, which we're not strangers to on this show. So she's going to tell us about all those things that I mentioned. She's been featured in magazines, and she basically is an expert in the subject of Tantra and the spiritual path, the Eastern spiritual path. So, Chandi, I'm just going to start right away with the most important thing I want to know from you really is, what's your opinion on why the West and the East, you know, how does the Western mind deal with the Eastern spirit? How can these two, it's more than food loving or Henry Kissinger. How is it that people in the West have fallen in love with Eastern spiritual practices, and really the Western mind and the Eastern mind are different? So please tell us something about that. Shed some light on that.
Okay, hi. Thanks for having me here, Laura. you know, I think the concept that is prevalent in the West is that God is outside of you, and he is a separate entity, and you have to always therefore look outside rather than within. They don't stress the importance of surrender. You know, what is that? And in the West, everyone is very third chakra,
assertive.
Yeah, exactly. And they misinterpret misunderstand many of the concepts. For instance, surrender doesn't mean you're submissive. It means you're just letting go of the ego and letting go of things that hold you back from experiencing the divinity that is within and not without. But, you know, I suppose in the old culture when Christianity first began, it was a means to control the masses, to keep the masses uninformed and keep them dependent upon a separate entity, the church. You know, religion is a great thing, it's a wonderful thing, but I think it, what happens is when you use it as a means to control the masses, then it loses its power and it creates dependent individuals who have not the knowledge to look within for all the answers they seek. Because everything you want to know is within you if you just know how to access it.
So let me just see if I understand what you're saying. I mean, I understand the stuff you said about religion, about Christianity anyway, but I feel the same about all religions.
Yes.
That religions have made people into sheep. I don't think that was the... I mean, I have to say this because you brought it up, otherwise I would try to be RC, religiously correct, on my show. But I feel that what you just opened up, I don't think Christ meant for people to be sheep. I don't think Muhammad meant for people to be sheep. I don't think that Moses meant for people to be sheep. He kept them in the desert for 40 years so that they could lose their slave mentality, and it didn't work. So, and even in Hinduism, people are sheep. They don't, and I don't know, I don't think Buddha meant for it. I don't know that any of it, because, but it's all been a way to control people to deal with the fact that there's so much humanity, and if there is no law or way to deal with people, to tell people what to do, people are there in chaos. Mm-hmm. So going to what you said, you're saying that people have everything they want inside them. Yes?
Everything within, right. We are just a microcosm of the universe. So everything out there is, you know, there's a saying, to know the body is to know the universe. And when they're talking about that, they're not meaning just the physical body, but they're talking about, you know, your emotional body, your whole being. And it's really important to get to the core of really who you are and see yourself as the genuine, authentic person that you are. We deal too much, I think, in the West with artificiality and things that are not genuine. And we put a high value on the artificialness and, if you will, the insincerity that goes with it, rather than being a person who can accept his whole being because he feels so much a part of the universe. We create little fragments, you know, we're all in them. We all have fragmented personalities. And I think the whole purpose of spiritual practices and the way the West has embraced the East is because we are all seeking to unify ourselves. And only by unifying ourselves individually can we, you know, unify the universe as well as becoming one with our partner. So it all starts with the individual. And this is where the work of meditation and all of the Eastern practices come in. And the other thing we don't understand in the West, because there's not that much emphasis put upon it in the religious ideas, but we talk about karma a lot. And this, you know, this feature is very important, because what it does is it places the responsibility onto the individual. So you are responsible for everything that happens to you. And there is no blame to be cast, or no pointing fingers, or, you know, trying to get an excuse out of your own actions, because it's really true. For every action, there is a reaction. And you can only truly practice have a spiritual lifestyle if you really understand the concept of karma and how your actions will affect everything that happens to you, whether it happened in previous lifetimes or in this lifetime. But also the practice of, or the concept of dharma, and dharma is similar. It's having an ethical or a moral flavor or what is the word, an outlook toward anything that goes on.
Could I say that I'm thinking that it's really context.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Dharma kind of like your context in which you live life?
It's the context. It's also your duty, if you will. Kind of your obligation as to what you extend to others and they extend to you, but it's behavior that is yourself regulated. You're not doing it because somebody's watching you or because somebody's going to punish you. You're doing it because you yourself, you have to live with it, and you are the one who is watching you. So there's nobody else watching you. So even if you lie or cheat, and you can fool everybody, you know, you're not fooling yourself. And this is who you really have to live with. So it makes it difficult, you know. It would be very difficult to have to live inauthentically. And I think there's a big difference there.
So you mean a big difference between Easterners and Westerners in terms of authenticity?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why you and I have had an earlier conversation about me going to India. I think I find people more authentic in India than I do in the United States anyway, or in Britain or whatever. So how do we? It's vast what you're talking about. I mean, how do we bridge this gap? How can Westerners? First of all, where are you originally from?
I'm from Hawaii, and my grandparents are from the East. So I was a third-generation American, but my grandparents did come from Okinawa.
Wow.
So I am I am both. I'm East and West. But growing up, I'm surprised because I thought it was, for me, it was quite normal. My mother encouraged me to, if I wanted to go to Sunday school with my cousins, go ahead. But they never imposed any teachings on me or insisted that I had to be christened or anything like that. My mom's attitude was that when you're of age, you can choose whatever you want, as a religion. And, we did. Yeah, and whenever we went to grandparents' house, we lit the incense on her altar, her puja. And, honored her ancestors, and she was quite pleased about that. And we saw no conflict. It was just natural.
That's great. So how do we bridge the gap with Westerners? I mean, obviously you can bridge the gap to a certain extent.
Exactly. It's a lot easier because I didn't have that, all the brainwashing or whatever you call it, put upon me. I was pretty independent. But I think Westerners are already doing it. What happens is when a country becomes more materialistic, they become less spiritual. And right now in India, they're becoming, more advanced, economically in every way. And so they're kind of, slacking off on a lot of their spiritual practices. And it's interesting because now they're going toward like you, they're going towards the Western teachers for their education, spiritual education, which is really great.
Well, I have to tell you, I was going to actually say that in my beginning, when I'm in India, everybody wants to be my student.
They
flock to me, and I'm always flabbergasted by that. I'm puzzled by that. And when I look for, I have combed India looking for certain types of tantra teachers who are called agoris.
Yeah.
And I can never find them. I found one once, but it was very difficult to make appointments with him because, and also he didn't speak English or even Hindi. So it was very difficult to find somebody who could translate and to have me surrender in a certain way to his teaching. And I've really looked a lot. I mean, maybe I haven't looked in the right places. I don't know. I just keep saying, if I keep seeking, I'll find someone. But maybe I'm not supposed to meet a teacher like that. Maybe I'm supposed to keep doing what I'm doing, and they're supposed to meet me. It's puzzling to me.
Yeah. It's interesting how that works. Maybe he's in a cave. That's probably where he is.
Yeah, well, I don't know where to find these caves.
Yeah. I know. I would be fascinated myself, you know. And I have a friend who does have teachers who live in the cave, tantric teachers who, you know, have not eaten for years or slept, and they just, I think it would be quite an experience.
So let me know if you want to go, because I'd love to meet these teachers.
We'll go look for, okay.
Let's go.
Let's go. I'll ask you.
Well, how has the practice of Tantra changed your life? Because since you're a bridge between the East and West, mm-hmm. and you have a uniqueness about you that you can translate, I believe, to me and to us. So you stumbled upon Tantra somehow. How did you stumble upon it, and how has it changed your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going through an awful, awful divorce. It was just horrible. And my friend insisted that I should go to meditation. And at the time, I said, well, I really want to meditate, but I can't do it right now. I'm too busy. And she insisted. So I reluctantly went to one. And as soon as I walked into the room and I sat in the chair, I was just swept away. It was just the most awesome, incredible thing. As we chanted, I cried. I mean, I just felt all their love, and I said, you know, I want to be like these people. Look how peaceful they are. Okay, so I went home with, every week I would buy like, you know, half a dozen books, and I just delved myself into it. I got so passionate about my studies. So this went on for a couple of years. And I thought, boy, this is taking too long. I don't want to wait 20 years, you know, to have the experience, an enlightening experience and all of that. And then for some reason, somehow, Tantra kept popping up everywhere I went. In the mail, I was receiving things. I mean, it was just amazing how it came just, every which way I looked, it was Tantra. And I said, oh, you know, I wonder if this is something I need to study, because it seems to be a sign. And when I read about it, it said that it can accelerate your path. And that got me. It was like, okay, that's what I got to do then. And that's how it got me started. I wanted a path. I wanted to accelerate my path. And I had heard that Tantra was the way to do it. And to make a long story short, it is. I would say, you know, within the first year of my practice, I must have jumped at least a couple of years.
Wow.
It was really, really everything that it said it was. And also some other things, you know, like there's a lot of positive aspects also.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that right there, because I just want that. You're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Hamlisch, your host. And my guest today is Chandu Devi, who is the host of another radio show, the Karma Cafe Spiritual Hour. She is a Tantra teacher. She's had a Shakti awakening. She is going to tell us more about her Tantra practice and how it's affected her life after we pause. For most of you, if you're wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness, I want to invite you to try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself, and possibly it'll even make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, which is make love in the unknown. And then I work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to get to making love in the unknown. I want your life to be fresh every moment of every day, holding on to nothing and embracing everything and having it be really fresh, like a new experience. Sex and happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Sandra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback or $14.99 in ebook. Go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers. That's sexandhappiness.com. So when we left off, we were talking about how you accelerated. This is Shandi Devi, my guest today, and she accelerated her meditation practices and what she was aiming at by incorporating Tantra into her life. After reading about it, her first year of studying Tantra, she said, jumped her ahead by fathom. So tell us a little bit more, Shandi Devi, about what do you mean by and the more? You know, how did this accelerate you? What qualities?
Initially I just felt this extreme bliss. The bliss of just feeling joy 24 hours a day for weeks on end. And, not getting angry, feeling so much more at peace. Later it went on to help my health. You know, I was able to, recover completely. I was diagnosed, after a flu shot, with rheumatoid arthritis, which does not run in our family. And there was no indication of it. It took the doctor several months to realize what I had. And so, you know, and this is part of the process as well. I knew in my heart that it was a purification process, that it was something that I had to get rid of. But it wasn't easy because I couldn't walk, I couldn't dance, you know, and I dance, and I'm a dancer.
How long did this last?
Oh, years. Years. And today, I am completely, free of it. My tests show zero rheumatoid factor in my blood work. And it's completely healed me. I've never been healthier. When I was in Florida, I was tested for allergies because I also had asthma and everything. I was allergic to everything you could imagine. Well, last year or the year before, I came back to California and tested here and I have nothing. I have no sign of any allergy. No asthma, no rheumatoid. It's just amazing. And you know that it is not, you know, just coincidence, which there is no such thing as coincidence.
Right.
Definitely something happened. And, I attribute it all to the fact that, you know, when you are in Tantra, you're working with chakras and the Kundalini. And for some reason, you know, as you go along and you purify yourself, or at least you try to, but it does show you results. And then with each result that you get, you're inclined to stick with it even more so. And the thing, though, is important is that when things are not good, you really can't go into self-pity or any of the negative thoughts. You just have to really, again, the word is surrender, and know that it is there for some purpose, but hold the highest hopes and aspirations, and know that it is not permanent. And it's really a challenge, I'm telling you. It is a challenge. And I went through, where I cried and said, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I'm trying to do it, but darn, this down thing hurts, you know? And it's just being brave. In fact, they say about Tantra that it's a path of the Vira, the warrior. You really have to be quite courageous because you don't know what's there. And when you work on purification, yeah, when you're on purification, you don't know what's lurking. So you have to face your own inner demons.
Now let's come back for a second because I want to make sure that everybody understands the chakras and kundalini, because you mentioned that and we move quickly on. I know you're talking about I personally know that you're talking about a process of purification and moving energy. And tell us a little bit about what your definition of kundalini is and how it moves, what the chakras are. I know it's basic, but I want to make sure people really get what you're saying, you know?
Yeah. And it can't be said enough. Kundalini is the energy that they depict her as a serpent who lays at the base of your spine, and she is wound up 3.5 times. And she is pure Shakti, pure energy. What we want to do is, during practices, what happens is you awaken the energy, the sleeping serpent, and she slowly will ascend up your spine. Her goal is to get to the 7th chakra, the Sahasrara, where Shiva, who is consciousness, is in dormancy there. He's pure consciousness, but he's inert until he is awakened by the Kundalini Shakti. So her job is from the first chakra, and you know, you do the exercises and we do the exercises to move her, to start her ascent up. So we work first to get her through the first chakra, which is the Muladhara. And this chakra is the chakra that stores your samskaras and your early life impressions. This is the survival chakra. So as you go through, when you first start to awaken her, all kinds of issues regarding survival issues may arise. And, you know, it's important to keep focus that it could be a first chakra phenomenon going on here. Eventually, she will ascend up to the second chakra, which is the sex chakra. And it's like the area below the navel, where the kidneys are,
And where the sex is, where people sex is.
It's a physical, right. It's the, it's love on the physical level. It's not, okay, let's just leave it there. And then it goes up to the third chakra. We'll go to the sixth chakra.
We could say too that the sex chakra has to do with pleasure and pain. Mm-hmm. On the level, and on the emotional level.
Emotional, right. And the third, of course, is your power, your willpower, your your determination, the things that you really need to survive, actually, in this world. You really need that factor. When you get to the fourth chakra, which is at the heart, this is where you express what they call divine love or compassion. So it's love, but it's an octave higher than the second chakra love.
Right.
So it's a higher octave. You know? So it's a wonderful place to be. And here's where you just flood with joy when you see something beautiful. Generosity is here. Just a very accepting, unconditional source of love. Then you get to the throat chakra, which is our expression and how we verbalize and express ourselves. And then we get to our sixth, which is the third eye between the brows. And here's where you gain your inner sight or your intuition. And it really develops right here at this level. And these manifestations, actually, you can, as you go through each chakra, you can actually feel the pulsing or some kind of, maybe temperature, you know, but something. You will feel some manifestation of it. And then, of course, the crown chakra when she finally meets with Lord Shiva. And then you have the divine union of energy meets consciousness. And that's the whole goal, because he, by himself, consciousness cannot really express it in whatever he really wants to manifest. And Shakti herself, with, if you just have energy but no consciousness, you can't do that either. You need each other. So this is what the whole union is about, and it can be within the individual body, and also you can express it with your partner.
Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. I just want to let people know that you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm speaking with Chandi Devi, who is clearly a knowledgeable force in the world of Tantra. She's explaining what happens as the Kundalini rises up the spine so clearly, in such a way that anybody really could understand, and what union means, that it's an energy and consciousness phenomenon. And I'm Laurie Hamlisch, your host on Tantra Cafe, and I'm so glad you're listening. Hopefully you'll stay tuned for more. So you just talked about how we got into this divine union. You could express it with a partner, or you could express it yourself. Now, I want to know, how this union has affected you as an individual. I hear that it's cleared up your health issues, which is, congratulations, it's amazing. And then what else,
Well, what it's done is, I'm a very, very right-brained person. I've always just been, just so highly creative and artistic, the whole nine yards. And I had very, very little skills as far as organizational and, more left-brain things. That was not my thing. My sister told me, you're the most right-brain person I've ever known. And what's happened is with Tantra, I've learned to access that left brain, and I am, as a result, a lot more balanced. Like putting the book together, that took a lot of left brain effort. I used to literally get a headache. My brain was like, oh my God, you're going to, I'm going to just combust. It was just not used to it. And so what's that? And then since then too, I've also learned a great deal about the computer, and I know HTML and things that I never dreamed I would ever know. And among other things, becoming very intuitive. Your intuition increases so that, you can. Well, your impressions of people and situations are pretty right on. And I think that's just, it just makes me, very pleased and very grateful that, that I'm aware of it. And I'm sure all of us have this, and we're just not aware that we do.
Now, you mentioned the book, so tell us, what's the name of your book?
Sure. The book is called,
go ahead.
No, the book is called From Om to Orgasm. And the reason being is we, Om, representing the spiritual practices, and how we feel that by having knowledge of the practices and actually doing them, it can bring you to the point of having authentic, living in an authentic orgasmic state. As well as, having orgasms. But basically, living your whole life as it is one big orgasm, which it is.
I agree.
it'll leak out to everything. You can watch a sunset and just feel, it's just an orgasmic sensation. It's just awesome. And, it's a way to live your entire life. Rather than living in fear, so you choose now to live in love.
Right. Right. And an orgasm in just is such a really heightened state, because it takes the body something to move itself into orgasm, and then it gets to orgasm, and it's like a peak experience all the time. So.
It is, yes. And to live in that state, if people knew Tantra, there would be no need for drugs, because yep. that, you know, it's like a permanent state of being. It's not like, you know, taking something now and then another half an hour you need another hit.
Right. Right. You're just like that. You're already, you're high all the time because you do the practices that move the energy through the body. So
right.
It's amazing what you're saying. Also, you have a theory. How can people get your book, From Om to Orgasm?
Actually, you can just go to Amazon.com and type it in and it'll pop up.
All right.
Or you can go to my site, theworldoftantra.com, and it's there at the bottom. You click it and it'll take you to the publisher's site.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we try to break the book up in three sections. The first section being more information and knowledge and background of the practice and the philosophy of Tantra. And the second, the middle part is about, you know, human beings and what our desires are. And, you know, and it's good to have desires. It's wonderful. We can just integrate everything, you know, material or with the spiritual. We don't see any difference between having a material life or a spiritual life. Everything should be in balance. And then the third section is about the actual things you can do, such as massage or, you know, dancing or sexual union and so forth. So the book follows that formula of knowledge, desire, and action. And, you know, only takes like, gosh, if you're a brand new person to this, you can start with 5 minutes a day, and I promise you this because this is what I did. When I first started to meditate, I could not sit. And I said, okay, that's okay, I'm gonna do 5 minutes a day. But I did it every single day, 5 minutes. Within a month, automatically I was sitting there for like 15 minutes or longer. But it just kept up that way. And then pretty soon I was sitting for an hour and a half without much effort. But it started with 5 minutes a day. And I would, you know, really tell everyone, don't be afraid, because I did it. I started 5 minutes a day. I couldn't sit. My mind was so busy.
Yeah. The mind is very busy.
The monkey mind, you know?
But I found that with the Tantra, with things like fire breath or charging mm-hmm. and transmutation, that my mind starts to get quiet right away, and different from when I was just trying to sit there meditating.
Yeah, you know, that's very important, because this is one thing about Tantra that is different from other practices, is that you keep your body active, but your mind has to be silent. So even if you're dancing like you're talking, you know, or doing all these exercises, your mind is really, the body is really, you know, active. But the mind is still, and it's actually an easier way to meditate. Dancing and chanting is my favorite meditation, actually.
I don't blame you. And plus, it's so much more fun than just sitting your butt down.
Exactly. Like that. Yeah.
My favorite meditation is whirling. So we're close.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I like whirling a lot.
But it's a good, yeah, I love whirling too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you took your desire and your desire to meditate. You know, you loved the energy and the flow that you felt mm-hmm. upon introduction to the first part of meditation. And then you took the Tantra practices, and they made everything, like you said, accelerated. And
yeah.
Now you're in this state of bliss. I mean, it's clear to me that you're in a state of bliss. If anyone couldn't tell that by just talking to you, it's so sweet to communicate with you. It's easy to communicate with you. I don't feel resistance. And I don't feel a lot of ego.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel you.
Well, thank you.
So,
you're
welcome.
Thank you. I try hard, but, you know, and then at a certain point you have to let go. See, that's the other thing.
Right.
Like I told you, I was a really good student for a couple of years. I mean, I just read books and books and books. But then at some point it was time to let it go. And I still do that. I'll let it go and I won't pick up a book, I would just engage in just my, you know, just being around here, the animals and the kids and all that, boyfriends, girlfriends, you know. And then I might be like this for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden I get hungry again. I guess it's like an appetite. You get hungry, so then you want to eat again, so then all the books come out again. You know, sure. And you start studying again, and then it goes into, you know, then it lets you rest, and it lets, if by resting, you actually have a chance to make it work again. Give it a chance to, to work.
Well, I like what you're saying. I really like what you're saying, because for me, it feels, to me, the highest practice in Tantra is being in the unknown. And I really try to prevent my students from making this into another religion and substitute this and making a law about it the way religions have been presented. So it sounds like it sounds like we're twins in that effort. You do some, you're really gung-ho for a while, and then you relax for a while. Now, I want to ask you some questions that I feel might help people if they understood, you know, if they got your answers to this. For example, I know that I just did my first teenager course. I taught 8 teenagers about sex and Tantra, and it was amazing. Their parents handed them over to me, but their parents knew me well. It wasn't just a public thing. So I want to ask you about parents and children. How can parents prevent their children from having the same baggage as them? The baggage of guilt and shame.
I think at an early age, they should always be told that to honor yourself, you know, worship yourself. My guru says, honor yourself, worship yourself, meditate on yourself. God dwells within you as you. And I think by teaching you that God is within you, you know, it elevates you. You cannot feel that you are a sinner. You cannot have a great self-esteem if somebody tells you, you're a sinner, you're bad. You know, it doesn't work like that. You need to show them that you are God, therefore, you are divine. You're a divine being in a human body. And, you know, you have inherited the right to have a life of good health and happiness and love and peace and joy.
And sex.
And sex is beautiful. There's nothing to be ashamed about sex. Honor it, because if God allows it, it's got to be good. How could God allow something and say, oh, here it is, but it's real, real bad, you know? And sex is the most beautiful thing in the world. And I think if people accept that, you know, it takes a different turn, because when you tell them that something is really wrong, what do teenagers want to do? They want to do it because, oh, this is really, really awful. You know, they want to do something that is that is illicit, if you will.
It
gives them some, you know, like adventure or... But if they're taught that they're divine creatures and their partners and their friends and everyone else is also divine, and then if you start to respect each other and, you know, have this unconditional love for one another in spite of differences and being just totally non-judgmental, and this is another thing, they should really stress not to judge people. You can discern without being judgmental.
You know, so that's very important. It's a very, very important point.
Yeah.
Very important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how could people prepare their own body for the process of Tantra? How can adults prepare themselves physically for the process of Tantra?
I think a lot of the practices and as you teach in your workshops, these are great, great things, and because they help to move the energy along, and plus they will inhibit the body. The body has to learn to be natural and authentic and not to be contracted or inhibited. And I think like the exercises that you teach all help to open a person up. Because you're only as open as your body. You know, if your mind is contracted, it's going to be really difficult to be real.
That should be a bumper sticker.
Pardon?
That should be a bumper sticker. If your mind is contracted, it's very difficult to be real.
Yeah, people are going to say, what is that? What are you talking about?
I know what you're talking about. So people have to really, they open their body. I mean, I look like I say I'm bypassing the mind. Like the mind is still going to chatter away.
Mm-hmm.
Because that monkey mind, that's its job. The reptilian brain, the part of the brain that's always looking for fight or flight,
mm-hmm.
That part of the brain is meant to keep us small and keep us in contraction and fear. It feels that our life is in danger.
See that
You know, even when there's no threat, you know,
right.
If you're wearing a better outfit than me,
mm-hmm.
to school, my reptilian brain feels threatened to death.
Yeah. And you know, that reptilian brain is actually at the first chakra, so the brain is way down there.
So that's what it is.
That's right. And you know, once we shake it up and loosen it up, it'll start to, you know, crumble, and then we can build a foundation. In fact, you were talking about the physical body. We have to build a foundation. It's like building a house. You can't build a house with no foundation. So this is where your exercises and your spiritual practice and your meditation, you know, this is all laid down like the foundation of a house first. And then from there you can start, you know, building. And then before long, people can live in it, you know?
It's great. I was going to say this before. It's funny. When you were going through the chakras,
uh-huh.
and you were, when you got to the heart, you know, and you said this is a divine place. For me, I have a lot of issues with people who are simply spiritual. I have issues with people who are on a spiritual path who don't practice tantra. I personally have them. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm not going to be RSC religiously or spiritually correct on my own show.
Uh-huh.
I have issues with people whose hearts are open and haven't done any lower work, any lower chakra
right.
work. If they haven't faced the snake,
mm-hmm.
if they haven't faced the bottom, their survival instinct, the reptilian brain,
yeah.
if they haven't faced the pleasure and pain, both the desire of it,
yeah.
the inflicting of it, I don't trust them.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You know, it's like, Tantra is the union of opposites. So,
right.
you know, the reptilian, the animal, it's all good. You know, you can be a divine person and still be an animal in bed. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, speaking of that,
speaking of that,
we just need to pause for a moment again. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Laurie Hamlers on Tantra Cafe, and my guest today is Chandi Devi, who is the host of her own radio show, which is Karma Cafe, Spiritual Hour, and we are having a great time talking about Tantra, talking about East meets West, and she just mentioned being an animal in bed. You can still be an animal in bed, so I want to invite you to my Red Hot Tantra course with my co-teacher, Gino Alegria, in a palace in India in January 2010. The course and the tour are from January 9th to the 22nd in India. You'll arrive in Delhi and spend the night, and then you'll travel by train to our lovely palace in Ajmer, located in the state of Rajasthan, India's most colorful state. There you'll study sexual secrets of Red Tantra for 5 days with me and Gino.
Okay.
It's going to be an amazing course. During your stay at the palace, you'll have a chance to explore the local artisans and craftspeople in the town of Ajmer. That's when we're not teaching you, building you up to a sacred ritual practice, Maituna. And at the end of your palace tantra course, you'll travel to nearby Pushkar, a holy city, and then you'll visit Agra to see the Taj Mahal, which is built from devotion, the devotion of a king to his wife, a true testament to love. And after Agra, you'll travel to Khajuraho to see the amazing Kamasutra temple built by the Chandala king. You'll have an ample time to see these renowned temples up close, and you'll get to meditate inside even. I love doing meditation inside these tantra temples. When you return to Delhi, you'll tour the city or shop in the Paragons, one of the world's oldest markets. If you'd like to stay on in India, we can make arrangements for you to have a variety of tours. You'll have plenty to choose from. For more information about this red-hot tantra palace course in India, please call me at 202-686-7440. That's 202-686-7440. Or write to me, laurie@butterflyworkshops.com. So, we're back for a few more moments about tantra and East meets West from Shandi Devi, who really is a bridge in her own right to Eastern, growing up Eastern and growing up Western all together. So I want to ask you, first of all, I want to ask you about your DVDs. We talked about your book, From Om to Orgasm, which people can order on Amazon, and you also have a set of DVDs called The World of Tantra. And what happens on these DVDs so people can know if they want to order?
Oh, well, I do some of the exercises that are basic tantra to awaken the kundalini and to loosen the pelvis, such as the rishis and the Tibetans and the meditations, some breath exercises. And it's meant for the viewer to just pop it in their DVD player and just follow along.
And how can people get that? Is that on Amazon too?
No, that one's on my site, which is theworldoftantra.com. And I broke it down into three, so there are some exercises, because all of one, it would just be too much for someone to be doing at home. So, you know, we broke it into three sections so that person selects the round of one, two, or three is what I call the Devi dance, which is a dance just celebrating the different elements. And the music is there, so all you have to do is pop it in. And if it's air, the music sounds real airy, and you kind of can take a glance at me and then just go ahead and dance around like your element. Your element is air. And there's fire, you know, earth. But the whole idea is to just kind of let go and just be free. And also, when I did that, the dancing part of the video, this is when my rheumatoid arthritis was at its worst. At its worst. I could barely walk. And I am dancing as best I can. And it was on the beach. And it's real simple. And if I could do it at my, you know, even in my progressed state of arthritis during that time, anyone can do it. So, you know, I would encourage anyone to pop it in and don't say, well, I can't dance, or, you know, I'm all left feet or whatever. No, you can't, because I did it. And just pop me in there and, you know, do your thing and just feel the bliss. That's the whole idea, is to just really get the music into your pores and just let it, just release it all out. This is really wonderful.
So what you're talking about, I want to connect this back to orgasm.
Okay.
Because what you're talking about, this dancing and letting the pelvis free, you know, in our last few minutes, how does moving your pelvis and dancing and curing yourself of arthritis, how does this connect to orgasms, multiple orgasms that go in waves, that go for hours?
Well, when you see that your body is, your body is liberated, you're free, as well as your mind. Because, so now you have nothing holding you back. The mind is not saying, no, you can't do that, that's not good, or, he's gonna think you're too fat, or whatever. You know, so you got that thing going on with the mind. And then you got the body saying, I'm stiff, I can't move. Well, that's not conducive to having, multiple orgasms even. So we learn to relax the body, just let it flow, and then when the mind goes as well, and you just enjoy the moment and just being present and not thinking, don't think. Just relax and just really enjoy it. Look, even if your body is imperfect, which all of us, most of us have imperfect bodies, if you just think and realize that, you're a goddess, and view yourself as the goddess, and for the man, and you see the woman and as this beautiful entity, this beautiful work of art here, and just relax and let it go, and if you just, live that way, also, when you're not having sex, and it can guarantee a very pleasant existence most of the time, And even if you do have challenges, you know how to get back. At least you have the tools, and you know how to get back.
Right, right. So great. Really so great. What a great statement. And you're living proof of it, and so am I. So, really, we've just brought the point together that we West and East are meeting, and if they're meeting anywhere, besides the fact that there's a yoga studio on every corner, like Starbucks, the East and West have met in your body, and they've met in my body, and our body and mind have connected in a way that's different from the frazzled life that people lead in the West, or the inauthentic, or the attachment to material things. I think everything you just said is the culmination of everything we've talked about, that you can just let it flow. You can let it flow on a day-to-day basis, on a minute-to-minute basis, and you can let it flow when also having sex. So everything occurs as an orgasm. Everything occurs as orgasmic and happy, kind of like, and you have tools to deal with everything else.
Exactly.
Really, really great.
Get over things. If you're presented with a challenge, you have the tools. It doesn't become a crisis. Your life doesn't become chaotic. You just cope, and you learn to with equipoise, and I think that's.
That's great.
That's the only way to live.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you, Shandi Devi, for being my guest today on the show. It's been a wonderful, wonderful hour with you, and I appreciate being on your show, and I appreciate you being on my show. It's just been wonderful. So I thank you. If anyone wants to order the book, you can order Shandi Devi's book, From Om to Orgasm, The Tantra Primer for Living in Bliss, from Amazon.com. You can visit her website, theworldoftantra.com, to get her DVDs and learn the movements and learn some exercises that activate your sexual energy, your kundalini. And I'm Laurie Handler, saying namaste from Tantra Cafe. You can find me at butterflyworkshops.com. I look forward to having you at my next show. Thank you.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.